This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After Congress failed to pass new immigration legislation, many cities and towns and some states are taking matters into their own hands. They've passed or they're trying to pass laws that would penalize businesses that knowingly hire illegal workers. Landlords could be fined if they rent to undocumented immigrants. And in one Virginia county, a proposed measure would require all county agencies to check on immigration status, including police, schools, libraries, hospitals, clinics, swimming pools, and summer camps. Some local officials argue that illegal immigrants add stress to already overburdened government services and contribute to a rising crime rate. If the federal government won't act, more and more local and state governments say they don't have a choice. We'll hear what some of them are doing and ask a civil liberties lawyer what he's doing to try to stop them. Later on the opinion page this week, a young novelist thanks outsiders for their help for Africa but cringes when he hears appeals to save Africa. But first, what communities are doing to deal with illegal immigration. If immigration laws are being considered where you live or if they've already passed, call and tell us what's going on. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we begin with John Stirrup, a member of the Board of Supervisors in Prince William County, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C. He's the sponsor of resolution that addresses illegal immigrants, and he joins us on the phone from his office in Arlington, Virginia. And it's nice to have you on the program today.
Neil, it's good to be here. Thank you.
And I'm sure you know that one of the principal arguments against your idea is that who gets into this country and why is a federal issue, and this is outside your jurisdiction.
Well, that is an argument. I think you could probably make the argument that police also enforce federal drug laws, but the reality is we've been forced to act because of the failure of Congress for decades, literally, to provide substantive immigration reform and to protect our borders. And we're seeing this on a daily basis in our communities, the negative impacts of illegal immigration. And fundamentally, our constituents will no longer accept that as an answer, that it's the federal role and we don't have a role here and we're just going to wait for them to fix the problem. They're tired of hearing that. They want action.
And others may object to that and take you to court for this.
Well, I think that argument can be made on literally anything any elected body ever does. And I know from talking with my colleagues, we're not going to be intimidated by the threat of a lawsuit to allow us to determine public policy. So if someone or group decides to sue us on this or another matter, that's how they choose to spend their money. That's fine. But again, we're not going to allow that to impact how we determine public policy.
Now, what are the provisions of the legislation that you've proposed, and where does it stand right now?
It was introduced on the 26th of June and was passed unanimously by the board on the 10th of July. There's a few key components to it, and really in the next 60 to 90 days, we'll allow our professional staff, both the police and non-police staff, to address a lot of the specifics as to how we'll implement our policies. Some of the things that we'll be doing, though, in terms of the policy, is we'll be seeking to deny services to those who are not entitled to them, particularly illegal aliens. We did include a chapter where police would be allowed to ask the question of the status of immigration for an individual who encounters the police through their violation of a federal, state, or a local law. Assuming that the police have probable cause, and that represented a change in an earlier iteration of the resolution.
So the police would not be authorized just to stop someone to ask them about their citizenship status.
Right. That actually was never included in the resolution. An earlier iteration had it that the police would universally ask everyone that they encountered, again, who they stopped only in the case of a violation of the law, ask their immigration status. That has been changed now to a probable cause standard.
And this would go all the way to county libraries, clinics, and swimming pools, too?
Well, again, we're going to let the professionals who handle those things on a day-to-day basis work out the protocols and the details as to how that's going to be implemented. I've been told through staff that there are some some aspects of services that we provide as a county that we are prohibited from asking immigration status questions to anyone that we provide in a specific program.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to drill down here in the next couple of months and determine exactly what those are and how we're going to go about implementing these.
But how would even the police, much less a librarian, if it came to that, how would they judge somebody's citizenship status?
Well, again, that's something I want to leave to the police professionals. A suggestion that's been made, and I'm not, I'm not saying that this has been offered as policy, but a suggestion as a standard might be that a probable cause standard might be that an individual has no identification, just as an example. And I don't want that to be misconstrued, that would only be offered as an example as mm-hmm. how we might proceed. But again, that's something we're going to leave to our adult detention center, our police department, our sheriff's office, working in conjunction with ICE to determine those protocols.
Your chief of police there in Prince William County said he was concerned, and again, the rules haven't been worked out exactly yet, but concerned that community policing might end because the minorities would be reluctant to report crimes for fear that immigration status would enter into this.
Again, I think that I've addressed that question in the past. The chief's comments were made, or were prepared actually prior to the final revised version of the resolution that went to the board last Tuesday, and I don't think are accurate to this discussion anymore. But I know he has expressed that concern about individuals in the community coming forward, and I don't think I think that's been overplayed. I don't think that's truly a concern. Fundamentally, if you were here legally, you have no problem. You have nothing to worry about.
Mm-hmm. But presumably, if you are here illegally, you do have something to worry about.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm sure you've also heard suggestions that the motives for this legislation are racist.
Well, it's unfortunate that something like that gets into the discussion. And I believe that there are individuals and groups who have made that their point of contention. I don't think anything could be further from the truth. It seems to me that is an effort to divert attention away from the real core argument of our resolution, which is the rule of law. Again, it is a crime to illegally enter the United States, and it is a crime to illegally remain domiciled in the United States. And we try to view that this discussion from that point of view, rather than allow it to be distorted through any of these side ancillary arguments.
And I wonder, you mentioned that the resolution passed unanimously. What's been the reaction of your constituents?
To say that it's been overwhelmingly positive would be an understatement. At this point, Neil, I believe I've received, far too many emails and letters to count or to read at this point in the community, in my district and throughout the county. And indeed, I think almost every state in the union has also submitted comments from individuals there positively in response to this.
And I know you've this is not the only national program on which you've appeared in the past few weeks. So this has obviously gotten a lot of national attention, too.
It has gotten quite a bit of national attention, yes.
Let's see if we get a listener on the line. And by the way, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's turn to Will. Will's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Good afternoon. I'd like to ask your guest, when it comes to an officer stopping a suspect and then inquiring as to their immigration status, what constitutes probable cause? And is that something that the courts have tested? And do you expect legal challenges on that in terms of a tension between that and accusations of, say, a racial profiling? Thanks.
What we deliberately did was to add in a 60-day time frame before implementation of this would take effect for the police chapter. And we're going to call on our police professionals to develop the standards, not only on probable cause, but on every other aspect of them that affects the police chapter of this. We're going to work with them to make certain that it is done correctly. In terms of a threat of a lawsuit, there have certainly been those threats, at least they've been in the press. Whether any or all will come to fruition is anyone's guess.
Thanks very much for the call, Will. And John Stirrup, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
John Sterp, a member of the Board of Supervisors in Prince William County in Virginia, and joined us today from his office in Arlington. With us now is Claudine LaMonaco, a freelance reporter based in Arizona who covers border and immigration issues. She joins us today from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. Nice to have you back on the program.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Arizona, where we last spoke with you, obviously immigration is a big issue there. The state's governor, Democrat Janet Napolitano, just a couple of weeks ago signed a bill into law that's among the toughest in the nation against employers who knowingly hire illegal immigrants. And this was a measure that Governor Napolitano had vetoed last session.
Well, not the exact measure, but something with considerably less teeth. This measure really is, business community here is really worried about it. You have, basically, it would require every single business in Arizona to enroll in the federal government's basic pilot program, which is a database of Social Security numbers and does an extra screening to make sure these people are actually here legally. Now, there's no other state in the country right now that is requiring that. Other states require that just businesses that do business with the state, you know, have a contract with the government, whatnot, have to enroll in it. But at the first violation, you would lose your business license. It would be suspended for 10 days. Second violation, that's it. No more business license.
And, of course, people in business are somewhat concerned. But Governor Napolitano specifically said she signed this bill. She's not particularly happy with it, but specifically after Congress failed to act.
Yes, indeed. She actually waited. She said she was going to wait and to see what was happening with the Senate bill until she, you know, was going to announce what she was going to do with it. And she basically said, you know, the federal government has shown that it is unwilling to deal with this right now. And so she can no longer justify, you know, that Arizona really had to do something.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A bill to overhaul immigration in the United States never made it out of the Congress last month. Now cities and states around the country say they have no choice but to come up with answers of their own. We'll find out how the Illegal Immigration Relief Act is faring in Hazleton, Pennsylvania in a few minutes. Right now, we're talking with Claudine LaMonaco, a freelance reporter who covers border and immigration issues. If such laws are being considered where you live or may have already passed, call and tell us what's going on. Our number is 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK, email talk at npr.org. You can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blog of the nation. And Claudine, before the break, you mentioned that this is a law passed in Arizona, and Arizona is hardly the only state to consider such legislation.
It's true. Companies that do business with the states, for example, of Colorado, Georgia, Oklahoma, Tennessee, are also facing a similar thing. But like I said, the distinction is that in those states, they're just targeting businesses that actually do business with the state government. What makes the Arizona law something beyond that is that every single business in the state has to enroll.
And as you were listening to the kind of provision that was passed in Prince William County in Virginia, does that sound similar to anything else that's being considered on the local level of which you're aware?
Well, we've passed propositions that, for example, prohibit illegal immigrants from getting certain services from the state. There's nothing ever been introduced that would, for example, make people check at public pools. That would be really interesting to see how they would try to possibly implement that, or in libraries. We've never gone that far, but I don't know that sort of thing would hold up to a constitutional challenge. Those who have drafted these bills in Arizona have gone through a couple versions of them, and so they're pretty savvy to the law. So they made sure that the proposition that passed would withstand that legal challenge.
They hope.
Well, so far, Proposition 300, I'm not talking about the employer sanction one,
yeah,
but previous ones, so far, the more recent ones that have passed have withstood legal challenges.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Faraz. Faraz with us from Riverton in New Jersey.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, what I'm trying, I want to say that there are a lot of towns around my area that are trying to pass these kind of legislation. What I'm trying to say that these kind of legislation, the anti-immigration legislation, they are creating nothing but hostility and hatred among two groups of people. And I'm sure there are better ways to deal with this, and I don't know why we can't come up with better ways to deal. I mean, there are kids watching their parents being treated in such an inhumane way. I mean, these kind of things are pushing this country towards the kind of riots that we had in France. Why can't we come up with some better ways to deal with this situation? Hmm. Why?
I guess that's a question for a legislator and not necessarily for me, but I don't know.
I know it's a question for legislators that, you know, I mean, we're saying we are such a compassionate people and a society, but we have this deep-rooted hatred and so much hostility for one group of people that we cannot even, I mean, let's register them. Let's not give them a citizenship or even a permanent residence. Let's register them. That will keep them from, if they want to work here, you know, let them work. But stop this inhumane treatment. And as if, I mean, we should be ashamed of ourselves, the things we're trying to do. Mm. You know, the way we are treating these people, why? Do we have to do it this way?
Faraz, thanks very much for your call. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
And Claudine LaMonaco, one way or another, I'm sure you've heard similar arguments in Arizona.
I have. And, you know, one, I mean, the personal stories that you hear of families being torn apart or, you know, straight-A students who can't go to college, who've been here since they were one. I mean, they're heartbreaking stories. But one thing that people are saying is that now that it seems like it's almost like a free for all. You know, in the last year, in 2007, there have been more than 1,000 bills introduced at state legislatures across the country, state and local legislatures across the country. So one of the things people are saying is that, you know, this might actually push the federal Congress to do something, to act. I mean, here in Arizona, if this is actually enforced, one out of every 10 workers here is estimated to be an undocumented immigrant. So this could have, if it's really enforced, this will have a serious impact on our economy. And people are saying anywhere from, you know, definitely the cost of business going up if they're going to have to start paying people more to do these jobs, or if illegal immigrants, which there are, I've spoken to people who said, you know, I'm going to move to another state. Mm-hmm. This, it potentially, you know, if it's not just lip service and if they try to enforce it, you know, could have a serious impact. And again, that people are saying, well, maybe that will propel, you know, the federal government to actually do something more comprehensive, like the previous caller was saying, that wouldn't seem so, that would actually deal with the problem as opposed to strictly being punitive. Mm.
Joining us now is the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, Louis Barletta. He's on the phone from his office, and nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks, Neil. Nice to have a chance to talk with you.
And last summer, you proposed the Illegal Immigration Relief Act for your town of Hazleton. What's in that bill? What's its status?
That bill, right now, we're waiting on a decision by the federal judge, which should come within a few weeks up to a month. And the bill punishes businesses and suspends the business license of businesses that knowingly hire illegal aliens and lawful workers, and suspends the license and fines landlords who knowingly harbor illegal aliens.
And so it sounds a little similar to the law in Arizona there.
It does sound similar.
And again, why did you feel this action was necessary?
Well, because I was watching illegal immigration destroy the quality of life in our small city. You know, our small budget cannot withstand the drain of illegal immigration. Our population here in Hazleton has increased by 50%, but our earned income tax, our main source of revenue that we rely on, has remained the same. so we're providing more services without people, obviously, many are working off the books.
Mm-hmm. So the same tax base and then more services.
That's correct. And we've also seen an increase in some crimes. And our small police department, at the time I proposed the ordinance, we had 30 police officers in a city that should have 60.
Mm-hmm.
So every hour that we spend on somebody that shouldn't be here, every dollar, tax dollar we spend, is a dollar and a man hour that we could be and should be spending on the taxpayers of the community.
And I'm sure you heard the call that just a moment ago, but I suspect you've heard people like that in your community as well. People say legislation like this just spreads hatred.
Well, I don't believe so. I believe enforcing the law does not spread hatred. I believe enforcing the law is what America is about. I don't believe enforcing the laws equally among people is discriminating against anyone. The only one it discriminates against are people who break the law, and from the people who are obeying the laws. That's what local governments do. Local governments ensure the health and safety of citizens and lawfully present non-citizens within our jurisdiction and within the framework of the Constitution, and we have the right to do that.
And I'm sure, again, the same question I raised with John Stirrup is that one of the arguments being made against your legislation is this is not your business. This is federal business.
Oh, I disagree with that as well. Enforcing laws are my business. That's what our business is, enforcing the laws and protecting the citizens. We are not regulating immigration. The city of Hazleton doesn't regulate who comes in and out of the country. We are punishing businesses, and people need to look closely at what we're doing. We are punishing businesses that knowingly hire illegal aliens because it is illegal.
Mm-hmm. And again, what's been the reaction from people in Hazleton?
Well, people have been very supportive, and I think the proof of that has been in my reelection this year, where I won the Republican side with 95% of the vote. And I also beat the former mayor as a write-in. I was a write-in. And I beat him by a 2-1 margin in the same election in the primary. So I think they sent a clear message to Washington that people want something done. And if they're not going to do it on a federal level, then they expect our local authorities to protect them.
If the federal court rules against you, what happens?
We will appeal it to the Third Circuit Court in Philadelphia. We are prepared to fight this to the highest court in the country if we have to.
Louis Barletta, thanks very much for your time. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Louis Barletta, mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania. He spoke to us from his office in Hazleton. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Drew, and Drew's calling us from Fremont in California.
Hi.
Hi.
I just had another point here. I am actually a Canadian citizen, permanent resident living in the U.S., and it just seems to me that all of these measures that are being talked about, it's almost as if I'm going to have to be carrying my green card with me in case I get pulled over by the police.
Mm-hmm.
That they're going to be asking me for my papers, and I'm just getting strange flashes of Hungary in 1943.
Of course, as long as you have the green card, of course, you're okay.
Yes, and of course I'm okay, but I don't see why I should have to show my papers to anyone.
Well, a federal officer, if they question, the papers are there for identification purposes.
And if it's just a city officer, though, or any number of people, or to show it to a landlord to get an apartment, as the mayor of Hazleton was just saying.
Mm-hmm. Or to get a job.
Yes.
Hmm. Jobs are, one of the reasons you have permanent status is that employment, there's some reason for you to be here.
Indeed, but it also just seems to me that it's shades of Nazi Germany asking for papers of everyone you meet who doesn't look like us.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks very much, Drew. Thanks very much. Claudine LaMonaco?
Yeah. Actually, that raises a point that some people are concerned about how this is going to be enforced and if it's just opening the door because if you are, trying to bring in everybody from the local librarian to the, I suppose, lifeguard at the pool,
mm-hmm.
into trying to track people's immigration status, that's really opening up an entire area where people who aren't properly trained in these things you know, it could be very easily open to abuse. And that's one of the concerns here in Arizona, that it might be us. One columnist, I think it called it like a trophy hunting by county attorneys to make a political point. Mm. So, for example, and it's people are guessing that it's going to vary widely from county to county with the county attorney in Maricopa County, where Phoenix is, Andrew Thomas, has been out on the forefront of cracking down on illegal immigration. So is he going to use this as a political tool to go after, you know, certain businesses, make a big splash, whatnot?
Mm. And again, it's also being cited by some as a reason for a national identification card that would be very difficult to forge.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We're talking about what local and state governments are doing to try to act on illegal immigration. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is Lucas Gutentag, the national director of the ACLU's Immigration Rights Project. He and the ACLU are involved in lawsuits against several towns' immigration ordinances, including the one in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, we heard about just a couple of minutes ago. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
And granted, the immigration law is a federal area of legislation. I'm sure you heard the mayor of Hazleton say, it's not our job to say who gets into the country or not. We're just saying if businesses knowingly employ illegal workers, they could stand to lose their license to operate here.
Right. And I'd like to respond to a few things he said. But I think first, you know, it's tempting to blame immigrants for problems. But these local ordinances are not the way to go. And they're based on false assumptions, and they're counterproductive. If the federal government is failing to do its job, this is not the answer, and that's what courts have repeatedly found. At every stage, courts have held these local ordinances unconstitutional because this is an area reserved to the federal government. We can't have hundreds of thousands of different ordinances around the country and different rules. The ordinances are discriminatory and divisive, as some of your callers have pointed out. They encourage stereotyping and profiling. And that's what studies have repeatedly found, that when you enact ordinances of these kind, that's what happens. And that's why the Congress has been very careful. It's a frustrating and difficult issue, but Congress has been careful in part precisely because when you enact these kinds of sweeping ordinances or federal laws, it does cause discrimination. And people are being sold a bill of goods. Just with regard to Hazleton, for example, if I could respond to a few things. What we showed at trial instead of these sound bites is that in Hazleton, crime has declined. Their budget deficit has turned into a surplus. Property taxes are at record levels. The hospital has a $4 million profit. There was a cut in police services based on the city's decision. And crime is not caused by undocumented immigrants. There's been a decline in the crime rate, as I noted. So this is just not the problem. And there's a good reason why, for example, in Prince William County, the police chief has opposed that ordinance. Now, I don't know the exact precise changes that may have been enacted, but the police chief did send a letter to the council just 6 days ago opposing that ordinance, because what he said is this is inconsistent with our law enforcement function. And we can't perform our primary duties if we have what he called a class of silent victims, namely people who are afraid to report crimes, afraid if they're victims of a crime to go to the police, afraid to come forward and be witnesses. And that's, again, why these kinds of sweeping prohibitions have not been enacted.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, just one other point. In relation to that pilot program that Arizona is looking at, there's been repeated testimony that the so-called basic pilot program is what it is, a pilot program. It's not capable of being used across the board. It has a 20% error rate in general. It has a 50% error rate in relation to non-citizens who are authorized.
This is the federal data bank.
This is the data bank that Arizona wants to require every employer to use. And the administrator of the Social Security Administration, the inspector general of the Social Security Administration has said, don't do it. Do not make this pilot program mandatory, because it will have all sorts of unintended consequences, including undermining national security, because it'll simply encourage people to use fraudulent documents in a way that we're not capable of handling. So at every turn, this is not good policy, and it does not meet constitutional standards.
We'll have more from Lucas Gutentag of the ACLU, and also Claudine Lomonico, who's a reporter who covers border and immigration issues. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're going to continue our conversation on what cities and towns are doing to deal with illegal immigration. Our guests are Claudine Lomonico, a freelance reporter who covers border and immigration issues. And also with us is Louis Gutentag, the national director of the ACLU's Immigration Rights Project. 800-989-8255. If you'd like to join us, email is talk@npr.org, the opinion page in a couple of minutes. I'd like to go to an email we have from Robert in Lafayette, California. Whether it's Hazleton, Pennsylvania, or Arizona, the draconian measures they propose are clearly going to backfire. Who will pick the citrus in Arizona? Who will vacuum the offices or wash dishes in Hazleton? How well will eviction of illegals from where they live improve the quality of life in local areas? They will all go underground. Homelessness will increase, and quality of life will get worse. These simplistic ideas always appeal to people, but they are never effective. You may win elections with that sort of illegal is illegal argument, but it won't improve your state or your town. And Claudine Lomonico, this is clearly something, particularly who will pick the citrus in Arizona. This is something that's very important to businesses there.
It's hugely important. And, one top economist after another here in Arizona has said this, you know, if enforced, this potentially can have a really big impact. And one thing I wanted to say about the basic pilot program.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Napolitano signed this bill, but she did it holding her nose. I mean, she said, you know, this bill has serious problems and she wants the legislators to come back and try to wrangle with some of those. But one of the problems is that the basic pilot program right now enrolls about 15,000 businesses nationwide. If every single business in Arizona were to join it, we're talking of up to 150,000 businesses. And, you know, she's asking the question, are we being realistic here, folks? I mean, all we have to do is look back at the, you know, passport debacle to see that really the federal government right now isn't doesn't have the capacity to deal with this. And unless there's a larger comprehensive approach and the federal government actually develops the bureaucracy to handle all of this, what's going to happen? You know, if there is a pretty high error rate now, imagine what's going to happen with the system if it gets flooded, you know, with tenfold.
Mm. And when you refer to Napolitano, of course, that Janet Napolitano, the governor of the state of Arizona.
Excuse me.
That's
yes.
Okay. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Sarah. Sarah with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi. I have a couple things to touch on, so I'll try to be brief and concise if I can.
Okay.
I was just recently at a state meeting for the Head Start Association, and our speaker was the sole employee of the Oregon Education Department Office of Civil Rights. He was talking about an instance in Seaside, Oregon, where actually had nothing to do with immigration, but brought up an issue that because of a custody dispute, a child was required to show a birth certificate for public school,
mm-hmm.
and the issue was brought up that public schools are not allowed to discriminate on the by race or sexual identity or national origin. And because of that, it has been brought up that birth certificates should not be required for any child to go to school because of the fact that a child that whose national origin is not the United States of America could possibly be discriminated against because of that. And I'm thinking that maybe it's possible that all public offices, including welfare offices and other places, it might very well be unconstitutional to require proof of citizenship for those things.
Why don't we turn to Louis Gutentag for that of the ACLU?
Okay.
excuse me.
Go ahead.
It's yes, the Supreme Court has ruled definitively that every child who resides in a school district, regardless of immigration status, including undocumented children, are entitled to attend public school. That was decided a long time ago. It's required by the Constitution. And what the court recognizes is that it's not only required by the Constitution, but it's bad policy to exclude children from school and to create a class of individuals who have no stake in the society, who are here, are likely to remain here. And one other thing that I think it's important to stress, that under many, many circumstances, families are composed of lots of people in lots of different immigration status. It's not the case that there's a simple, bright line between documented and undocumented, legal and illegal. Many people are waiting in these huge backlogs, waiting to get their legal status, but because of the way the law functions now, or because of incredible bureaucratic delays on the part of the federal federal government. They can't get the legal papers that they should be getting. Others live in families where one person's a citizen, one person's a legal permanent resident, another person may be undocumented. So it's not possible to simply say, let's deport every undocumented person or let's drive every undocumented person out of a particular city or town without recognizing the devastating consequences that will have on families, United States citizens, and permanent residents. That's one of the reasons why Congress was looking at the bill that it was, and everyone's frustrated at the lack of action by the federal government. But these state and local laws are not the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate being able to talk to you specifically, Mr. Guttentag. And the other issue that I had actually does affect me personally. My husband is in federal prison right now. We are United States citizens. And because 60% of the federal prison population is there for immigration issues, he was forced to move to a prison 2,000 miles away from us, from his family, because there was not room here where we live. And also, there are huge long waiting lists for classes and things that can rehabilitate people. And I think that a huge problem, obviously, is the overpopulation problem in the prisons. And there really needs to be a different way to handle this. It's ridiculous to say, no, you're not allowed to live in this country, so what we'll do is we'll house you in this country and pay tax money for you to be in this country and feed you, clothe you, and house you here and allow your legal family to come and visit you. They even need to make sure that these people have a way to live in a productive manner in society or figure something out, but it's not helping anybody to have to pay huge amounts of money to house them there.
Yeah. Sarah,
thanks.
Doesn't
make any sense to me.
All right. Thanks very much, Sarah. And you just hear the you've addressed the issue of the frustration. And clearly the frustration as it reaches local and state, electorates, this is we heard from, clearly the mayor of Hazleton and the supervisor in Prince William County. These kinds of measures are very popular. The frustration is enormous.
Yes, there is enormous frustration, but the answer is first to put pressure on Congress to enact real reform that addresses these real issues, to integrate and not to divide communities, to work together at the local level to address the real problems. Immigrants work hard, they pay taxes, they're the victims of crimes, they want safe communities, they want to live in an environment like everyone else that is safe and productive. And these kinds of ordinances, as one of the callers said, they divide communities. They divide communities based on racial lines, on ethnic lines, on national origin. And instead of everyone pulling together, it pulls people apart. So the answer is to work together. In Hazleton, for example, what the studies have shown is that there are real problems with the tax base in that community and that there's not enough land within the city limits and it's all out in the county. Well, those are issues that have nothing to do with immigration. There are lots of issues with our tax system generally, that benefits flow to the federal government. In lots of cases, localities bear the burden of populations, all populations, whose taxes go to the federal government and the money doesn't flow back. Those are real issues that need to be addressed based on the actual dynamics and not to pull people apart along ethnic lines. And it clearly has, as numerous government studies have shown, when you enact these ordinances, what happens is people look at anybody that they think sounds, quote, foreign, anybody that doesn't look that they think that like someone they think a United States citizen should look like in that particular community is under suspicion. And it's not based on immigration status. It encourages profiling and stereotyping.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Louis Guttentag, National Director of the ACLU's Immigration Rights Project, and he joined us from the studios of Sports Byline in San Francisco. And Claudine LaMonaco, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Claudine LaMonaco is a freelance reporter based in Arizona who covers border and immigration issues. Joined us today from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. And coming up next, it's the Opinion Page.